Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Hello, welcome in. It's a Tuesday edition of the Hoosier Report. Glad you're with us today. We're live from the Big X Studios in Jeffersonville. And a reminder, if you ever can't join us for the live program at 11 o'clock, make plans to catch our podcast. We are available on Apple Podcasts, also on SoundCloud as well. So a couple easy ways to connect with our program each and every day, one way or another. Let's take a look at today's show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham. Today in segment one, as always, we start with our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. And the big news we'll start with here in just a few moments, Justin Smith, who transferred from Indiana a few weeks ago as a graduate transfer, has found a new home in college basketball. So we'll tell you where that is, a little bit more about his new destination. There's been a pretty good update in college football we'll talk about. A six-week practice plan has been written by the Division I Football Oversight Committee. It still has some approvals to get, but it looks like a hard plan for the return of football practices is now making its way out to coaches with a few approvals still needed. A couple other notes in our headline segment to pass along, including a few little recruiting tidbits. So stay with us for that coming up here in the first segment. Later in the program, Tuesdays, we always get the opportunity to talk with Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star. Greg, obviously, a fun guy to have. You never quite know where the conversation's going to go. Today with Greg, we're going to talk a little bit of sports, a little bit of non-sports. We're going to talk about the Indy 500. They announced yesterday, and I know Greg's working on a column on this subject, but they are not, even though it's been delayed, obviously, from the May date, they are not going to run the race without fans, like other sports are choosing to do. They are going to delay again and try to find a later date, it sounds like, to run the race if feasible and if possible. So that's an interesting take from a sports organization or a governing body, I guess you could say, that they are going to, they're determined if the 500 is run, at least in this calendar year, that it's going to be done with fans in the stands, I'm assuming in some form or fashion. Not sure that any fans in the stands in any sport near future at all is going to look normal whatsoever. So that's an interesting point. We'll talk with Greg about that and more when he joins us in the program a little bit later today. Also, I think we touched on this last week, but more on Greg's thoughts on Justin Smith's departure from the IU program as he's found a new college basketball home. Later in the show, Mike Pegram of Pigs.com, he'll be with us. We'll talk the latest in IU basketball, IU football. There's a couple recruiting things to get to. There's some stuff with this NCAA Oversight Committee and football return to play proposal that's going around. I want to talk with Mike about also, so we'll cover basketball and football in that segment today. Our headlines each day are brought to you by our show lineup each day is brought to you by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Make sure you visit the Honey Baked Ham store and check out all the new dinner package deals that are now being offered. Also, you can dine in as well as pickup and curbside service. That is still available at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. And don't forget the 50% off bone-in ham special. It's still going on. It's a great deal for a limited time. All right, let's get into our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. And as we enter the headlines segment here, a reminder that we'd love to hear from you. If you've got a question or comment for Greg or Mike, or something you want to send in to us, you can follow me on Twitter, at Hoosier Hills. Again, all one word, Hoosier Hills on Twitter. Love to hear from you. You can follow me there for updates on the show, links to podcasts, upcoming guests, and a lot more. And hope you'll follow along there. And love for you to send your questions, your comments in. Perhaps it'll get read on the air today. Headline number one, the biggest story right now from an IU basketball perspective is former player Justin Smith, a forward, graduate transfer for Indiana, leaving the program. He committed yesterday on social media. He announced on his Twitter account that he will play his final year of college basketball at Arkansas. And again, that's interesting because Indiana's had some matchups here recently with Arkansas, including a couple seasons ago when they played Arkansas both in the regular season and in the NIT tournament as well. Smith started 73 games in three seasons at Indiana. Last year, he averaged 10.4 points and 5.2 rebounds as he started all 32 games last season. Obviously, he's immediately eligible as he did graduate, which is very impressive, in just 3 years from IU's prestigious Kelly School of Business. And another note about Arkansas, Eric Musselman, a new coach there, I guess this is his second year. Last year when Indiana played him in the regular season, that would have been year one for him. Arkansas making some changes. They had a decent year last year. They went 20-12, but they've got a number of graduate transfers coming in. Normally you see a school maybe with one. Two is a lot when it comes to graduate transfers in a normal setting of a college basketball program. But for Arkansas, they've got three. They've got a forward from New Mexico, Vance Johnson, coming in, a guard from Northern Kentucky, Jalen Tate, as well. So Smith is announced as the third graduate transfer to date for Arkansas's team next season. Be interesting to follow him in the SEC and see how he closes out his college career and what is next for him after that. NCAA football Division I Oversight Committee has drafted a six-week plan for schools. It's still got to get some approval by a couple different bodies within the NCAA, it sounds like. But basically, it allows coaches to work with their players as soon as July 6th. So just under a month from now, if this plan is approved, it'll transition from just voluntary workouts with strength and conditioning figures at each school to the opportunity to have some oversight and some involvement from head coaches and assistant coaches as well. The plan also allows for required meetings and walkthroughs to start in mid-July if this six-week plan is approved. And there are lots of other components of this plan, including the number of hours each week as you move forward that a player will be able to be involved in college football and related activities. And also, you know, some schools start on what's called now week zero, 1 week earlier than most of the rest of the college football schedule does. There's some wiggle room in this plan for if you are a school, unlike Indiana does not, that has one of these early games, you can the schedule adjust a little bit to allow you to be a little ahead maybe of other schools that get that extra week of practice and don't play on week zero and have a traditional week one game to open up the college football season. So this six-week plan, it's out there if you want to read it. Sounds like it's got a great chance to be passed as is, and that will kind of be the guidebook for what the return of college football and perhaps fall sports at the college level looks like. Also, speaking of the return of sports, you know, we've had a couple reports. I think it's maybe three, four, five different schools have reported so far that there have been some positive COVID-19 tests with football players and athletes returning to campus. The first one I've seen with men's basketball, Texas Tech, yesterday confirmed that there had been some positive tests. They did not say exactly how many within the men's basketball program was how the release was worded. There were no other specifics given. It says those who tested are self-isolating and will be monitored daily by the sports medicine staff and team physicians. So, again, it's going to be interesting to see how many cases of this virus are caught as athletes return to campus, and are they able to catch it? And I know there's some automatic kind of quarantining as you wait for your test result that's supposed to take place. As they catch it, are they going to be able to keep these athletes and students away from each other for a period of time until the test comes back, yes or no? And then if they do have it, obviously they'll need to be in a reasonable quarantine so no one else gets it. So there are some real challenges that schools and athletic departments are having to go through just to get players back on campus. And then once a player's back on campus, if they go out and about to see friends or family or go to a restaurant or have interaction with someone else that does have the virus, do they bring it back in after the initial testing and things like that? Lots of challenges with this thing to try to get back to some normalcy in sports. I thought this was a fun Big Ten basketball fact. No Big Ten team has won more games in the last decade than, can you guess? Michigan State with 264 wins in the last 10 years. Where does Indiana rank in Big Ten teams in the last 10 years as far as total wins by Big Ten teams? Indiana is seventh with 205 victories. You go number one, Michigan State, number two, Michigan, number three, Wisconsin, number four, Ohio State, Purdue is fifth, Maryland is sixth, and then, of course, Indiana at seventh as far as most wins in the Big Ten Conference in the last 10 years. And an interesting note, Indiana got a football commitment on Friday from Trent Howland. He is from Joliet West in Illinois, and a good, from all accounts, a good addition to the IU football program. He's a 2021 football player, so obviously a senior, his senior year forthcoming in football. But I read a note yesterday that he also is a very good basketball player and is considered top 100 in the state of Illinois, which is always a pretty solid state when you factor in Chicago and some of the other hotbeds for basketball. So, again, I don't at all expect that he'll play at Indiana and probably isn't good enough to play basketball at Indiana. But nonetheless, he is a good basketball and a ranked prospect in the state of Illinois. That's a look at our Zaxby's headlines for this Monday edition of the program. We have Greg Doyle and also Mike Pegram forthcoming in the show a little bit later. And a reminder, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. It's an easy way to catch up with our show each day. All you got to do is open up the Apple Podcasts, the purple icon app on your phone or computer, type in the Hoosier Report, click subscribe. It's obviously free. And if you would be so kind to leave us a rating and a review while you're there so we can connect with others that would be interested in a daily radio show and podcast about IU and about sports here in Southern Indiana. Stay with us. We have Greg Doyle ahead, Mike Pegram as well. We'll talk Indy 500. We'll talk Justin Smith with Greg. And, of course, we'll get to IU basketball and IU football with Mike Pegram still ahead on this Tuesday edition of the program. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Tuesday program. Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star. He's a sports columnist for the Star. He's with us Tuesdays presented by Coffee Crossing. And today we want to say happy 17th birthday to Coffee Crossing. Today they are celebrating 17 years that they have been doing business here in Southern Indiana. So we appreciate not only the great coffee, the great drinks and other items at Coffee Crossing, but obviously the support of this radio show and the support of bringing Greg Doyle on the program. And we want to give him a birthday shout out today here in the segment sponsored by their name. Greg, great to have you with us today.
That's awesome. 17, such an awkward number though, let's be honest. I mean, 16 drive, 18 you can vote, 21 you can do some other stuff. 17 is, I mean, it's great. It's a prime number. I like prime numbers. They're divisible by one in themselves. Other than that, I don't have a lot to say about 17 other than I'm just happy to be part of it is all I can tell you, but sorry to be the killjoy, but 17, that's kind of like the anniversary everybody forgot.
Absolutely. No question about it. But we are glad for Coffee Crossing. And, Greg, you got to get down for your straw, help me here, dark chocolate. What was it?
Sugar-free dark chocolate. And can't we just call it the 16th anniversary 2.0? Because that really resonates with me. I might just walk down there for some sugar-free dark chocolate coffee if it's 16 2.0.
Absolutely. Greg, I want to start today our segment with just an unbelievable column and a unique story. And, of course, you just have a way of telling everything in written form and even verbally often on our program. But you – and I'm assuming it was by design. I know you're out walking about when you have time, but you were in downtown Indianapolis when they took down the Garfield Park monument that recognizes, I think, almost 2,000, just under 2,000 different names of Confederate soldiers that fought representing the South in the Civil War, and wrote, it has nothing to do with sports, but wrote a fabulous column on it. And interestingly enough, you believe, according to research from your father, who we've talked about before on this program, that you have a direct descendant possibly that was in that war, was involved with the Confederate side. And, you know, you were going to look that day before it came down to see if his name was on the monument. But you've got an interesting story, an interesting take there, and we're seeing monuments like this come down. Some have already come down in years past. Some coming down now is kind of maybe an immediate response to protests and other rallies that are taking place across the country. And I have a feeling that we're going to see a lot more of similar type monuments come down across the country.
Yeah, I've got this Forrest Gump-like ability sometimes to be at places, stupidly, to be at places when something happens. They announced last week that the monument was going to come down. Maybe they announced it Friday or Saturday, and it just kind of occurred to me, crap, I do have an ancestor that fought in the war that for the South, Thomas Doyle. He died of tuberculosis shortly after the war, and there's a camp here in Indianapolis devoted to sick soldiers and that died for the Confederates. It was a war camp. Prisoner of war camp is what it was. Anyway, so I'm thinking, I want to get over there before they take it down. I just want to go see if my uncle or my great-great-granddad or whatever, whoever he was, if his name's on there. And when I get there before the park even opens on Monday. It's like 9:30. Park opens at 10. They're already halfway done taking it down that morning. I just happened to show up when it happened. I didn't know it was going to happen. So I never got to look. I never got to see if my relative's name is on there. This is one of the stories that people have strong opinions about. I get it. But their number one argument they make, I'm going to blow it out of the water. I'm just going to absolutely blow it out of the water. And then they can come up with argument number two, because I know how people are. No one changes their mind. They decide, you know what, I'm okay with this or I'm not okay with that. And it really doesn't matter what happens next. It doesn't matter what facts come out, what new perspectives might be raised. You think what you think. So bless you. But the argument against that is it's history. We don't erase history. We're not erasing anything. The names on that list, the Robert E. Lee statue that came down in Virginia, we're not taking them out of the history books. He's not Voldemort. He's not he who shall not be named. We will never forget these people. We will never forget the war. Their names are on tombstones, whatever. But there's a difference between remembering history and honoring it. There's a huge difference. We don't have statues on, and I realize it's a bad comparison, but Germany doesn't have statues, I hope, honoring Hitler, because he was important. Yeah, he was important. He's in the history book. But a statue implies he's worth going and visiting and honoring. Now, if the statue is there so we can take our unit out and pee on it, that's different. But so Robert E. Lee doesn't deserve a statue, and whoever made it for him was wrong. But right now, 150 years later, that guy was a traitor. Okay, and war is complicated, I get that, but there's nothing people talk about, well, there's nobility, he died in war, there's noble. There's nothing noble about dying in war when you're killing Americans on American soil. There's nothing noble about that. They weren't trying to be America and kicking the bad Americans out. They were the bad Americans, and they were trying to, they seceded from the Union. They said, this is not our country, we're not Americans anymore, and we want to honor that. I'm not saying Robert E. Lee wasn't a great general, wasn't a great war mastermind, wasn't whatever he was. I'm sure he was good at a whole lot of things. He was good at killing Americans is what he was good at. So And people are like, yeah, but my relatives, and I realize in Southern Indiana, I know there are people listening that they know they've got relatives that fought for the Confederate Army. Hey, so did I. Okay, so did I. And I'm not proud of it. I'm not ashamed of it. I mean, it had nothing to do with me, but I wanted to see my granddad or whoever he was. I wanted to see his name on there, and then I was going to write, take it down. I wasn't going to write, but my name is on there, so it's different. The world hates this whole thing, and racism sucks, and slavery sucks, and blah, blah, blah. But my relatives fought there, so it's kind of okay to have them. But no, it's not okay to have the monument up. I was going to pull my unit out and piss on my own name and then walk out of there, but I didn't get the chance. So anyway, that's what I got to say. So if your number one argument is, but it's history, and we don't take history down. We don't burn books. We're not burning books. History books has all these names. We're not changing history. We're just saying we're not going to choose to have a monument up that people can think is honorable. Nothing honorable about it.
Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star, in this column available at indystar.com/sports. I'm not going to give away the column, and there's a lot to it, but you were at this monument watching it be dismantled piece by piece. There was a police barricade, and you just randomly strike up a conversation with a young lady walking her dog, and I think as you told her the story and you told her that you may have someone on that monument perhaps and that you had someone that fought on the Confederate side, she's trying to be like a peacemaker. Well, I understand both sides and, you know, so forth, but you quickly turned the corner in the column, as you just explained to us, and I just thought it was very well put together. I'm not sure exactly what I'm trying to get to there, but the way you weaved in the young lady who wanted to remain nameless, I thought added to the story. So another job well done, and another good way to bring up a non-sports topic here on the program during this very interesting time in our country, important time in our country.
Yeah, and I wanted to name her. She wouldn't let me name her. She has, I won't be too specific, but she has status in one of the services, armed services. And they've been told explicitly, do not talk about this stuff. And I said, well, can I say that you're in blank service, but can't be talking about it? She said, no, nothing. So I didn't put that in the paper. You know, so that's why I left that part out. I wanted to name her badly. I talked to a black couple. I talked to white people. I didn't put this in the story. It would be too flammable, but I can't believe what I heard, but, there's a couple flatbed trucks out there, and they're huge, obviously. And it's kind of chaotic scene out there. And the workers are there doing their thing. And there's probably 10, 12 people in hard hats, maybe more. And I'm inside the police tape, as a couple of reporters are, and around the fence near the monument, but not close enough to see anything specifically, but I heard the N-word. Mm. I heard, you know, these men were talking. There's three or four of them, and it was kind of a guy was going on a sentence, and then I heard him, well, he's just a N-word. And I don't know who they're talking about. I wonder if it was George Floyd. I don't know. I don't know what they're talking about, but I heard that. Mm-hmm. And I was actually, you know how when there's a cab of a truck, a flatbed, an 18 wheeler, there's a cab, and then there's the actual thing that pulls, and between the cab and the thing that pulls is about a foot of air. Mm-hmm. Like, no, there's nothing there, at least not at eye level. I was literally walking behind the cab. I wasn't working, I wasn't hiding, I wasn't spying. I'm just walking from here to there. I'm walking, I'm right behind the cab. They're on the other side of the cab. I don't even know they're there, but all of a sudden I hear this. And in the next instant, I step, because my momentum takes me, and now I'm in that little two-foot sliver of space between the actual cab and the thing it hauls. And so, and they're there, and I just, you know, my head just jerks around, like, what did I just hear? And I kind of look over there, and I see these four men, and one of them looks at me, and the other three are looking around, like, did anybody hear that? It was, so I'm not even sure what value I'm bringing to the program by telling you that story, but I heard that, and just wasn't going to write it, because...
I think it just underscores what's still out there today.
Yeah, it would just run. It would just hijack the whole thing. And there's a certain point where, and I know I'm saying it here on the radio, so people might say, well, what's the difference? Well, once you put something down in print, and the Indy Star, you know, they show off the stuff I do and all that, so it'll be there forever, and it'll be there prominently forever. And that's different. a conversation on the radio, TV, whatever. So anyway, that moment made me sick too. One more thing I'm gonna say about this when we move on. Two things. One is, if you are in favor of, you know, Confederate monuments, or you don't like them being taken down, and I haven't convinced you that you're wrong. I am not saying, so I'll be as clear as I can be. I am not saying every last one of you who feels that way, you're all racist. I am not saying that. I realize the world's not black and white, it's gray, and there are surely some racists that support those monuments, and there are surely some racists that want them taken down, and there are surely some non-racists on both sides of that too. So I'm not painting anybody with a brush. But I do want to point out this, and it never ceases to amaze me that some folks don't think the way I think on this one, but you know, we're all unique little snowflakes. But you think about the Confederate flag, you think about these monuments. The KKK wants the Confederate flag. The KKK wants these monuments up. My thought is, anything they want that regards race relations, that's not the side I want to be on. It's just not. And some people have that flag in their car, you know, and they know, whether they're racist or not, they know that the world thinks you're racist. If you have a Confederate flag in your truck, the world thinks, I mean, you know it. If someone listening right now, if you've got that flag in your truck, you know the world looks at you and thinks you're racist. You know that. I'm not saying you are racist. I'm saying you know the world thinks it. My question is, if you know the world thinks that about you, why would you put it in your truck? Even if you're saying it's wrong, they're wrong. I'm Matt Dennison, ask me this question. It's not rhetorical. It's real. If you had anything in your wardrobe at all that you wore publicly that you knew people looked at you and said, well, you're obviously racist, would you wear it ever again?
Never. Wouldn't have it in the first place.
No, you're right, but you wouldn't have it in the first place. But if you did, and if you found out that, you know, I've been wearing these jorts, or I've been wearing these kind of shoes, or I've been having this kind of flag for years, and now you're telling me the world thinks I'm a racist for it? Well, the world's wrong, but I'm not going to show it off anymore because I can't afford to have people thinking that about me.
Right.
Our folks up there that still wave that flag, we're thinking it about you, whether we're right or wrong, and apparently you're okay with that, which tells me we're probably right.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Make sure you check this column out from Greg. It's another good one. It has nothing to do with sports, but very important and a very well-written piece. And, Greg, thanks for telling us even more insight than maybe what was in the column as we bring it up to start our segment today. I do want to jump into some sports, and I'll be honest, I think this came up last week. We were into some sports and non-sports stuff last week as well, another enjoyable conversation, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I think it came up, but maybe you can expand on it a little bit. Yesterday, Justin Smith announced that he's going to Arkansas. We knew a week and a half or so ago that he was going to transfer from Indiana, that he had gotten his undergraduate degree from Kelley School of Business, which is unbelievably an accomplishment there in 3 years, a very prestigious part of the IU academic program. But Arkansas is his new destination, and Arkansas is a team that we know a little something about because I think Indiana's played them 3 times in the past 2 years. Last year, a regular season game, and if my memory serves correctly, the year before that, it was a regular season game and an NIT game. Your thoughts on the void of Justin Smith, because there seems to be two sides, and I think maybe the side is bigger as far as fans that are not happy to see Justin Smith leave but are intrigued by all the minutes he got over the years he was here, what the production was or wasn't in some cases, and what this could open up for some other very intriguing IU players like Jerome Hunter, like newcomers, like others that are returning. What do you see as the void, the loss here, and what do you think about Arkansas as a new home for Justin Smith?
You know, I think everybody wins that he's leaving. I think everybody wins. I think he wins. He wants to go somewhere else. He's earned the right. He graduated 3 years of college. In any major, that's impressive as a D1 athlete or 4.5 years. He graduated 3 years of Kelley School of Business. You know, standing ovation to you as a student. So you've earned the right to go somewhere else. And he wants to. But I think IU wins too because Justin Smith isn't just Justin Smith. You know, playing the way he plays, we've all seen it, with the motor that he has or doesn't have. He's not just a forward. This year he would have been a senior forward. And I just don't think, you know, it's all Archie's still trying to build that culture, and still trying, you know, still hoping to do something special this year. And I just don't think that having a senior with no motor at all, I just don't think that's what you want on your team. Maybe he will find his motor in Arkansas. Maybe he'll find it, and I hope he does for his sake, because he has NBA athleticism and size and physicality. He doesn't really have NBA skill, but he's got a lot of NBA attributes about him, and not everybody has. But he's got no motor at all, and I just don't think that's what you want on, as a senior. So, yeah, it's a shame they're going to miss 10 points and 5 rebounds, whatever they're going to miss. But I think what you gain in losing that lack of motor in a leadership role is probably a net gain.
Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star. This segment is brought to you by Coffee Crossing. It's their 17th anniversary birthday today at Coffee Crossing. Greg, final topic I want to broach with you today, the Indy 500. It's been delayed, obviously, once, like so many different sporting events. We've seen auto racing, the NASCAR, then IndyCar made a return over the weekend, but auto racing being one of the sports to return first, although it's been done so far without any fans in attendance at the raceways or the tracks. The Indy 500 saying that they are not going to run it, even on its new date, its rescheduled date, without some sort of presence of fans in attendance, which makes me wonder, are we going to get a 500 race this year?
Yeah, they say they won't run it in August without fans, and they'll run it in October. And the impression I get is that if fans can't go in October, they won't run it then either, which means they won't have it. And I say good. The Indy 500 is not the Genesis 300 or whatever they have at Texas Motor Speedway. It's not Darlington. It's not. I mean, there's nothing else like it. The Indy 500, if we're going to compare it to baseball, it's Game 7 of the World Series, and you don't have Game 7 of the World Series without fans. At least I hope you don't. So the thing is, every other race on the circuit, really, it's just kind of a placeholder. You know, this week we're in Texas, next week we're in Iowa, next week we're whatever. And it really kind of, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, in the real time it matters, to the racers it matters, to the family it matters, but in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't. It's just another race. It's like a July game between the Royals and Marlins. It matters up to a point, but not really. The Indy 500 matters, and it matters because of the fans, not because it's the 500 and there's great drivers. It matters because of the fans and what we do and see and how we experience and how we talk about it and compare Gordon Johncock to A.J. Foyt and how, because we were there to see it. The 500 without fans is not a 500, and they're going to have a race there at Speedway in July 4th. They plan to have the Brickyard and the Grand Prix and a Xfinity Series Pennzoil race, and so they're going to put a product out there this year, but not that one, not the 500. And I'm completely on board with that.
Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star, with us on Tuesdays, presented by Coffee Crossing. Greg, as always, thanks for coming on. Thanks for sharing your opinions, your work. Always a great conversation, sports and non-sports. Thank you very much.
Matt, thanks for giving me that chance. And anybody that I offended, I hate that apology. If I offended you because you think I painted you with a broad brush, I didn't do it. I realize we're all unique snowflakes. You are who you are, and that's the way that's going to be. So anyway, Matt, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star, he's always with us Tuesdays here on the program. And do me a favor, if you listen to this show and you like Greg's segment, and you listen to this show most days or the podcast, stop by an area Coffee Crossing location. Tell them happy 17th birthday today. Get yourself an enjoyable drink, and tell them thanks for supporting the Hoosier Report and bringing you the Greg Doyle segment each Tuesday. I want to transition from Greg's interview to a quick note, and this is not a good one. This is another passing here in the area, but I understand from my broadcast friend P.K. Falkenstein that legendary Jeffersonville baseball coach Don Poole passed away around 11 a.m. this morning. He had been in failing health the last number of days, very severe, and has passed away. He obviously was a huge impact of Jeffersonville's great success as a baseball program. He's a 27-year head coach in Indiana, 17 years of those leading the Red Devils baseball program, 519 career wins in his high school baseball coaching career for Coach Poole. Led the Red Devils in baseball to three Final Fours. Those came in 1973, 1980, in 1984, was inducted into the Indiana Baseball Hall of Fame in 1990. And I did not know this. He was an assistant coach to George Marshall on some of the great teams of the 1970s as well. He's a member of the Indianapolis Ben Davis High School Hall of Fame. And again, many other honors for him, both as a player and a coach across our state. But legendary baseball coach at Jeffersonville, Don Poole, has passed away earlier today. All right, we'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with more. Mike Pegram, Pigs.com on IU basketball. Going to get into some recruiting as well. A couple new names out there for the Hoosiers as far as potential targets. We'll also talk the return of college football as well. There's a plan that's been put forth. We'll chat about it with Mike coming up next here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment of this Tuesday program. Mike Pegram, Pigs.com, is our guest. And we'll start with college football, IU football today. Mike, first, a new commitment for the Hoosiers on Friday. Illinois Prep is going to join the Hoosier football program. He's a member of the 2021 recruiting class. And I saw earlier today he's a decent basketball player as well for Joliet West, his high school there in Illinois. What do you know about the latest addition to the IU recruiting class for the 2021 class?
Yeah, Trenton Howland is a big back in the mold of Stevie Scott or Samson James, the two guys that will be taking most of the carries this year. You know, it's good to have someone like that ready to succeed those guys, since there'll be a few classes behind them, maybe just a 1 year overlap at most. He's a guy who's big enough that they've actually, you know, some schools are looking at him as a possibility of playing linebacker. He's that physical, but a very good athlete and complements the other running back they had picked up a commitment before, because he's more of the quicker, elusive type of tailback.
Mike Pegram, Pigs.com. Our guest, obviously, high school football is, we hope, going to get underway as we do college football this fall, but recruiting on the football side of things has been different as well. You know, again, I'm not a football guy. I self-admit that, but football involves recruiting a lot of different positions, a lot of different players. You're not just going to get all your guys locally or from the Midwest. They need to come from other areas as well. I would have to think, and I know there's additional coaches and there's support when it comes to tracking recruits and things like that, but I would think that as much of an issue as recruiting has been for basketball and will be for basketball this summer without live events and visits and things like that, that football at IU has had their own struggles as well when it comes to recruiting.
Yeah, I think a lot of the recruiting now is pouring back over the high school film of last season, especially some of the guys that maybe they didn't get a look at much before. Now that you have time and aren't having camps and all that, you go through a lot of that. So it's made it more difficult, but there is a process and offers are going out and commitments are happening. Actually, it's happening earlier than normal. The Zoom has made contact easier. I mean, talking about video conferencing with recruits, make contact, and the relationships are actually building quicker than I remember them. It's just that the coaches are going off a little less information than in the past.
Talking with Mike Pegram of Pigs.com. I mentioned earlier, it's kind of a topic right now with college football across the country, a six-week practice plan for schools that's been put together by the Division I Football Oversight Committee, and it seems to have support to get approval. And if this document does pass, it will clearly lay out exactly what can be done each week, what can be done on a time frame for college football programs to follow across the country. Have you had a chance to look at it much, and What are your thoughts on the plan, which will get eventually, in about a month from now, if it passes, get college coaches back leading their teams with walkthroughs and meetings and things of that nature?
Well, Tom Allen had told us that he felt there was a pretty much a consensus among the coaching fraternity that 6 weeks was enough time to get everyone ready. And therefore, you know, that with most schools starting at the end of August, I think that dates back 6 weeks, goes to mid-July. So if they are able to do that, and we don't have a, you know, a big uptick in the virus and all that, that's the plan. And they'll be careful about it. Right now, EN is limiting football players to nine at a time in workouts and on, both off on the field and in weight room stuff. And so if somebody does get tested positive, it's just eight other guys that you maybe exposed, and that's going to hold for a while. But yeah, I think it's a pretty much a consensus. That's enough time to get ready for the season. And they're going to try to see it get approved here officially in another week or so.
Mike, let's transition to a few basketball topics. Justin Smith to Arkansas. We knew he would play the game at a high level. We knew he would probably play in a power conference. Some wondered if it would even be the Big Ten conference, perhaps. Your thoughts on Justin to Arkansas, how he fits in at that location, at that school. And Arkansas is a team we know a little something about for an SEC team because of them playing Indiana here recently a flurry of times.
Yeah, though they've had a coaching change since then, but I do believe they're still pretty much an up-tempo program. And Justin Smith, as we all know, was very good in transition and a very good athlete, maybe the best athlete on Indiana last year. So from a fit from that perspective, you know, we'll see if he gets to play on the perimeter, which I think is a motivation for the change, because he probably got a lot of NBA input that if he's going to play at that level, he's going to have to, you know, develop a better jump shot and be a little bit better with the ball. So that'll be interesting to follow. But the school choice makes some sense in terms of speed of play and how being a good fit for him.
Talking with Mike Pegram of Pegs.com. From a recruiting perspective, we are getting some new names that Indiana has offered in the 2021 and 2022 classes. You guys on the Pegs.com site have profiled and interviewed a lot of these guys or their coaches. Tell us some of the new names that are popping up here in recent days and where you think IU stands with some of these new names.
Well, we did a story this weekend on a 2022 point guard, Bruce Thornton out of Georgia, which is interesting because it's, you know, an area that sporadically Indiana has recruited, but he's a point guard, which makes some sense that if now that Christian Lander will be on the team this year, that somebody that's 2 years behind Christian, he's a top 40 guy, so he may not be a five-star, but he's, very close to that range. And, Al Durham's from the Georgia area, greater Atlanta area. It's been an area that he has recruited well in the past. Jeff Newton, A.J. Moya, Rook Callaway, just a lot of guys over the years. So that's one interesting development. And they continue to, recruit Mason Miller, another Mike Miller's younger son, and Mike just stepped down from the Memphis staff. So that's been interesting news in the last week. So there's a lot of things going on besides just, that everyone wants to talk about Trey Kaufman, but there's a lot of other players that Indiana's recruiting hard.
Talking to Mike Pegram of Pegs.com. In-state players, it's a question I always get. In-state players, I think we've got a pretty good handle now on the 2021 class and where Indiana stands and who's committed elsewhere. And, of course, Trey Kaufman is a big-time prospect out there that Indiana is still working to land. You drop down to 2022. We've begun to learn about some of those players. A number of names have been mentioned and we've talked about, but who jumps out at you from that younger class that could be the next level of great players, the next big names on not just a statewide level, but maybe even the national circuit as well?
Jalen Washington McGarry is probably the most talented player, regardless of class in the state, just a really, he's a little bit under the radar, 6'8", 4'1", because He was injured his knee, didn't play this past winter, but he's top 10, 15 in the nation, and Indiana and everybody in nearby will offer, and we'll try to get him on campus. But he has been on Indiana's campus, and so they'll give him everything they have. But he is up in Gary, which is a tough area to recruit. And Kamari Lands at Lalamere up north, but he's originally from Indianapolis. He's a versatile 6'6 player. And those two guys are probably the most talented that we've identified, but there's some really good point guards. They're undersized in Indianapolis area. Leland Walker from North Central and really good player at Noblesville. So they just really, at Westfield, I'm thinking about Braden Smith. And just a matter of those guys gaining a couple inches. And when you're that young, you still have a chance to develop physically. So it's a good class, Matt, but I don't think it's huge in terms of depth. But definitely some Division I talent and at least one five-star.
Mike Pegram, Pegs.com, with his final note. It sounds like, based on the Friday interview with Don Fisher, he was talking with both Fred Glass and Scott Dolson, outgoing AD and incoming AD. Indiana making plans, I think, like most schools are, for fans to be involved in football and, of course, basketball and really all sports.
Yeah, we don't know how many. They're making plans because they need to make plans for both a lot of fans or a limited number. They have to have all sorts of contingencies. There's so much money involved and such an important program for Indiana, and this is a big year, but they'll be following the same guidelines and doing the same kind of things that the other Big Ten institutions will do and probably most of the country. But we don't know what that'll be, whether it's, 20% of the seats being used or 100%. But they will definitely come up with as safe as they set up as they can, and so they're going through all the discussions on that and all the contingencies.
Mike Pegram, Pegs.com. Check out the website, Pegs.com. Lots of IU information, basketball, football, recruiting, and more. Mike, as always, thanks for the chat.
Yeah. All right, Matt. Take care.
All right, Mike Pegram with us on Tuesdays. That wraps up this edition of the program. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. for a Wednesday edition of our program, available on Apple Podcast and SoundCloud as well. So if you missed the live show, make sure you check us out there. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. You're listening to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.